This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Pacific Northwest emergency rooms are seeing long wait times, and not because of a COVID surge. Doctors are seeing rising cases of other respiratory viruses like RSV, or respiratory syncytial virus. These bugs are stressing children's hospitals across the county, and that includes Children's here in Seattle. Dr. Kimberly Stone is the Associate Chief of Operations for Emergency Services and Clinical Director at Seattle Children's. And right now, she's managing a very busy emergency department.
We are seeing, just like other children's hospitals across the country, significant increase in our patient volumes.
What are the symptoms of RSV, and when do they become dangerous for kids?
RSV is a common pediatric illness. Most children have been infected by RSV by around the age of 2 or 3. In some circumstances, it really presents like other viral infections, could cause fever, could cause cough. The youngest patients, so usually, you know, young infants and neonates, can have significantly worse disease, but really anybody is at risk for complications and significant infection, which can be something called bronchiolitis, inflammation of the smallest airways, the bronchioles of the airways, as well as pneumonia. For patients experiencing either bronchiolitis or pneumonia or just significant RSV infection overall, you can have certainly fever and cough, but then you start to see symptoms of increased work of breathing. So that can be an increase in your respiratory rate, signs of using accessory muscles like using your abdomen or belly to breathe, as well as kind of sucking in around the ribs, flaring of the nostrils, as well as kind of a little bit of sucking in right along the top of the clavicles, what we call in the tracheal area, tracheal tug. And those symptoms really are indicative of patient needing to use a lot of extra accessory muscles and extra work to continue the work of breathing. Along with the work of breathing, young children will sometimes slow down or not eat as much because really they're expending their energy to breathe and don't have as much energy to feed. So as we talk to families about what to look for, we're looking for those signs that the kids are struggling with the infection. So not just fever alone, but really these extra signs of increased work of breathing, really decreased feeding, such that they're not having adequate urine output. We would expect kids to still be able to urinate a couple times a day, which would indicate that they are taking in enough fluid to maintain their hydration.
And that extra effort in breathing, the lack of urination, those are the kinds of danger signs that would, say, trigger a parent to want to bring that child into the emergency room.
Exactly. Those are the things that indicate that a patient needs more of an evaluation. They need to get their vital signs checked. They need to have a thorough physical exam to make sure that they don't need additional supports. There's no treatment for RSV infection, just like the majority of other viruses, but there are supports available.
RSV spreads locally in the community every year. A lot of folks get this virus, including adults. Why are we seeing an uptick in RSV hospitalizations right now?
It does spread locally in the community every year. This is something pediatricians and pediatric ERs are very used to seeing. The seasonality of it is usually more like December and January and lasting for a couple of months. So likely we are seeing just a significant transmission and uptick in viruses related to children not having been exposed to as many viruses over the last couple of years with the pandemic. We did have some RSV circulating, but transmission wasn't occurring at the same rate because there was social distancing, there was masking, and people weren't getting as infected with viruses. So we have a situation which really we haven't seen before. Young children that might have been exposed over the last couple of years really haven't been exposed. So they're kind of naive, if you will, to this particular virus, as well as some of the other viruses that are circulating, because there's lots of other ones going around as well. And what that means with the naive immune system is that you have more people who could be infected. And again, without the measures that have been used during the pandemic. So without masking and without social distancing and things like that, we're seeing an increased spread. So you're also seeing older kids. We talked about the younger kids, but you are also seeing now older kids, the school age, the teenagers, and even the adults who are getting RSV also just because they have not had as many viruses, hasn't had as many illnesses, and with the high transmission that's going on. So we are seeing significant infections and burden of illness in those populations which aren't traditionally as affected by RSV as well.
There is an RSV vaccine on the horizon, I understand. How close are we to having a vaccine going into arms for RSV?
RSV vaccines have been developed in the past, and there are some in use for some of the most at-risk populations already, but RSV has at times been a little bit of an elusive virus. So I'm excited to hear that there is a possible vaccine and that it's showing some good promise. Certainly using some of the knowledge that we've gained recently in the setting of COVID and the COVID vaccines certainly can help. But I still think we're probably, you know, a couple years away at least of a viable vaccine that could be used. However, we do have vaccines for some of the other illnesses. We are beginning to see influenza. So I really would encourage people to be getting the flu vaccine. It's not too late, and it really does make a difference in the severity of illness. I would also really encourage the COVID vaccine for all children, as well as for children greater than 5, the available booster that's there.
That was Dr. Kimberly Stone with Seattle Children's. And with the return to more in-person activities and fewer masking and safety protocols, local daycares and schools outside of the Seattle area are also reporting an uptick in sick kids. But it's not clear whether RSV is the culprit. Anna Marie Hill is a nurse with the Cleellum Roslyn School District. She says pinpointing RSV in her community is complicated.
We don't have the ability for a lot of reasons, right? Whether it's the lack of providers or the distance to providers. We just don't have the ability for parents to be able to get that type of test, right? Like we had with COVID. That's what was so nice with COVID is it really brought testing to the school districts, to the layperson, right? Because you could then figure out when you had an illness, it was it COVID or not. And that was so important, but we don't have that with other viruses. So unless a parent were to take their kid to the emergency room, we don't have the ability to know if their child has, you know, a different type of coronavirus or human parent influenza virus, or if it's RSV. And that can be tough because then we don't have good data to know how many cases we actually have.
Mm. And how likely is it for a parent in Cleellum, say, to actually get to the point where they're so worried that they would take a kid into the emergency room with RSV? I mean, that seems like a pretty extreme step.
Yeah, that's a really good question too. I think that also brings up, you know, so many more complicating factors with, do you have insurance? Do you mm-hmm. have transportation? Do you have the ability to get to the emergency room? I mean, interestingly enough, I have a kindergartner who's homesick right now. She has symptoms of a virus. I don't like to say symptoms of RSV because I don't know. It could be influenza. It could be RSV. I know it's not COVID because I have the ability to test at home for that, but that's all I know. For me, I will do all the things that a parent usually does and, you know, give them the ibuprofen or different medications to help to combat the symptoms. And then if I'm worried enough, I will go to the emergency room, but I don't think that that happens a lot of the times. I mean, for most parents, they deal with viruses at home. So we really don't have good data unless a child were to be hospitalized. We just don't know what our numbers are.
And how does that hinder your ability to respond to the virus? If we don't know how prevalent it is in the community, that really holds you back from being able to make policy decisions, right?
Yeah, and that's why I think I always consider that all viruses should be treated and, you know, treated equally in a school district. So we need to just make sure that we keep kids that are sick home. That's also another complex issue is that we have parents that need to work. It's not as simple as being able to stay out for the required amount of time. I mean, every virus, just like we learned, has a different, not only incubation period, but the amount of time that you're viral. So we don't know necessarily, are we sending kids back well, let's say they're better, but they're still viral. That kind of came about with COVID, right? We knew exactly the amount of time that the potential incubation period was. That was very much in the mainstream for parents. Parents knew how long they were potentially viral for. That's why we have the CDC saying that you should be outright for about 6 days, because that's what the data shows for about the amount of time that you're potentially viral and able to spread the illness. But we don't have that good information for other viruses. So it's really important that we just have clear protocols for our families as best as we can to keep kids that are sick out of school, and really encourage parents to let them know, you know, now it's not about COVID, it's going back to how it was pre-COVID, and it's about keeping all viruses, right? Mm. Every virus can affect kids different. It could affect, let's say, kids okay, but be difficult for our elderly teachers. It could affect, let's say, healthy kids okay, but a virus could be detrimental to a kid with asthma. We have all of those populations that we need to protect.
What kinds of resources would help you as a school district nurse prevent severe illness in kids?
Yeah, I would love to be able to test. I think COVID really brought to the forefront that ability. We have a really cool nucleic acid machine at our school district that we received through COVID, and it has the ability to test for RSV and for influenza. That would be such a wonderful tool to be able to bring about for our school district, especially in a rural school district, right? Because we just don't have the same opportunities that an urban center has, but we don't have the financial means to do that. I mean, it's very expensive to provide that testing, and with COVID, we did have that funding stream, but we don't have the same funding stream both through state and federal levels for other viruses. You know, and it's hard because school districts aren't labs. I mean, this is not necessarily something that we are made to have, but COVID kind of pushed us over the edge of maybe, right? This is something that our health services team could provide. And I know that we would love to do that, right? It would be great if parents wanted to test their children and we could test on one machine with one sample and it could test for three different types of illnesses, or to potentially four or five when you count all the strains of flu. I think that's such a powerful tool for a parent. And it's also powerful for the school, because then we'd have data. We would know what was circulating in our school district.
Without, you know, a lot of extra money to achieve those kinds of testing results, what kind of changes are you able to make to decrease the spread of viruses?
So one thing that I think that came about with COVID that was very important is masking kids in the health room is really smart. So that was something that was not required beforehand, but it is an incredibly powerful tool when you think that if you have children in the health room that are ill, right, and actively ill waiting to get picked up, that is a very small space for them to be able to potentially spread viral load, right? Especially if you have kids that are coming in for non-reasons related to being ill. Maybe they want to get their inhaler because they're an asthmatic, or they want to get their blood sugar taken because they're a diabetic, or they have an injury, or I mean, all the other reasons that they come in. It is such a smart practice to mask the children that are showing viral load, which is still a requirement of Department of Health. And I think that that's something that we should keep doing, because it really makes sense when you think that you're putting probably, you know, the most ill or most virally active students in one space. Masking works, and if we do that before they go home, I think it really helps to protect everyone that's in that healthcare setting.
I know masks are not universally beloved by parents
Yes.
these days. Do you ever get pushback about the idea of masking, even though we're talking about it in a health setting, in the health room?
Yeah, so we, you know, luckily we haven't. It was definitely something that our community was glad to see gone, or the ability to have the choice, right? So our community wanted the choice, and I'm glad we were able to give that to them. And I'm also glad that Department of Health stuck with their protocol of masking in the health room, because it really does make sense. I think if you're thinking about how can we do better in a school district, right? How can we do better? That is one way that seems pretty simple, that if you are in the school and you are ill, whether, you know, the symptoms came on pretty dramatically, which with kids it does, right? A parent could send a kid to school that was fine and 2 hours later they're not. That can happen. then it would make sense to get them masked until a parent can pick them up. I'm sure people aren't thrilled with it, but we've done great with communicating that that's a Department of Health requirement. And I do think it's one that really makes a lot of sense. And honestly, we probably should have been doing that beforehand, before COVID. But it was just something we, you know, not just us, our school district, but I don't think any school districts were doing that. And it definitely can help to decrease the spread if you know it's a kid that's actively shedding virus.
Some researchers believe that RSV may be spreading so rapidly because we had this period of social isolation. Newborns were not infected with the virus earlier because of the COVID protocols that were keeping them safe from another virus. So how do you balance the short-term health of a child with their long-term development of their immune system and the exposure that is just part of being a kid?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think most importantly, we don't want any of our kids going to the emergency room with RSV, right? And nor do we want anyone going to the emergency room with COVID. I think it is a balance. My kids have been pretty sick this year. So I think you're correct that if I only have data of my own family, but we've been hit pretty hard and we were healthy for a while during COVID. But just like you said, we were masked and social distanced and it works great. I think we definitely saw that decreased a lot of spread of illness, but kids do get sick and that is absolutely a normal and healthy, many would say a very healthy part of childhood. So I do think it is that fine balance between if we're seeing increased rates of hospitalizations go up, right, especially in certain areas, we definitely, I think, want to do education with families about what to look for, which I think they're doing a good job with parents of what to look for. When is, let's say, breathing a concern for your child? I think it's important to stress, though, that not every virus is RSV. And I worry right now. So just like with my own child, and I'm lucky I'm a nurse, but she's got a virus. I know that. And I am not worried that it's RSV. That doesn't mean that it's not, though. And I know that, but I'm just going to continue to monitor her symptoms just like I would with any other virus and then move further to further evaluation if we need to. Mm-hmm. I just think it's important that parents know that. There are so many circulating viruses. So I think it would blow people's mind if they knew how many different types of viruses there were. And even if, let's say, there's a cluster of RSV in one community, even if it's, let's say, 30 minutes away, that doesn't mean that that's what's circulating in our community. And we saw that with COVID. So we saw that, let's say, in a school district 30 miles away, let's say Ellensburg, could have a wave of COVID in their school district, but we weren't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe ours came a couple weeks later. And so I think it's really important that we think and kind of reflect back on all that we learned with COVID and remember that it's the same with RSV. So we might not have hit our RSV peak in the school. We might have and did just fine. But like I said, we won't know unless we test. So we just have to treat every virus, I think, the same right now and just make sure to keep kids home if they are ill.
What do you think? I'm seeing a lot of things pop up in my social media feeds of celebrities talking about their kids getting hospitalized and sharing really how fearful they are of RSV and how serious they are taking it. Do you worry, though, that there's a bit of a panic happening right now in terms of the real danger of RSV?
Yes, I do, for a lot of reasons. I think we have to get back for parents to empower them to evaluate their children appropriately, right? So giving them that power of you've got this. These are the things that are significant and worrisome and really empower them to know that stage, right? Because we want parents to go to be evaluated if their symptoms warrant it, right? Not when their kid has a sniffle the first day and a fever, but really when trouble breathing starts, they're listless, they're, you know, not alert and oriented. We got to empower parents for that because my concern too is our health system can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
We can't bombard our providers right now because we already have a shortage. And then I think it really just makes parents feel like they're not capable, and they are. I really feel like COVID showed how capable we all are with our health, but I think when we do put a lot of fear into people, we take away the parents, you know, it's like that fight or flight, and instead sitting back and being like, okay, it's day one, my kid is talking, they're sometimes running around. Like, so for my daughter right now, she was pretty listless this morning, but she had a high fever. She had 103 fever. I didn't give her any meds because I wanted to just see how it worked, but she's talking to me fine. She's going to the bathroom fine. And if I don't use my nursing brain, it can be scary, right? Because then you have that fear-based of what if it's RSV? What if it's RSV? But if I put back on my nursing hat, my kid's doing great. She just has a virus that could be anything, and she's going to be, I really feel like, just fine. And if she's not, then I know what to look for, and I will go seek medical help then. But it's, I think she's going to be just fine. And honestly, like I've seen with so many kids, they end up being just fine.
Anna Marie Hill is a district nurse at Cleellum Roslyn School District. Thank you very much for sharing your time and your perspective with us. I've really appreciated this. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 FM Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime online at KUOW.org or on your favorite podcast app.